This is the Big E Sports Show
on the Sports Map Radio Network from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios.
Here's Alyssa Walker Campbell.
Okay, hard to believe we're already in hour two at Sports Map Radio Network, the Big E Sports Show. You know, to kick off this hour, the NBA conversation is going to continue with my producer, and that is Sean Mapes. And, you know, it was interesting. We had talked about it briefly in hour one that we're already starting a brand new season. I mean, opening night is just around the corner. Do you think the players had enough downtime, or are they starting the season too soon? I know the NBA, they're trying to make up a lot of ground and a lot of lost revenue.
Yeah, it's a little rough because they have to kind of juggle. The Lakers and the Heat have only had 57 days since their last game. But then you have teams like the Knicks, the Bulls, the Warriors that haven't played since March. So either teams that have almost no rest or almost too much rest and are completely different teams now. So it's going to be really interesting to see how these teams juggle the rest versus rust thing, especially with COVID and the injury concerns in a normal NBA season.
You know, one specific player that we got to talk about is LeBron. I mean, how do you think he's going to pivot and handle the grind with such a quick bounce back right into the season? I mean, he has definitely been very vocal about it. He was not pleased.
Yes, he's not been shy about letting everyone know that he is going to take it very slow, especially to start the year. The NBA actually introduced new fines for sitting star players in national broadcast primetime games. I'm really interested to see how they define star players, who's on the line. But LeBron definitely is, and I expect that you won't see him in mini games that aren't those marquee matchups, especially early in the season.
You know, I have to wonder, too, you know, Sean, with an abbreviated offseason for some of the players, I mean, this is what's kind of, you know, gets a little dicey. I mean, you've got some teams that they didn't have a lot of time to rest and rejuvenate. I mean, is it a bit reckless by the NBA to, you know, require these guys? They got to jump right back into it.
I think it's reckless. Or borders on reckless at the very least for the finals teams. And the,
I mean, 58 days, didn't you say 58
yeah,
days?
Yeah, that is crazy. And then also with the offseason being so abbreviated and then they immediately going to training camp, there's not going to be a very high quality, you imagine, of these teams that got put together kind of at the last minute.
Hey, we're getting you ready for hour two at Sports Map Radio Network, the Big E Sports Show. Join us online at Twitter at eRadio Sports, and we will be right back with much more coming your way. NFL news and notes and PGA news and notes with Larry Miller.
The Big E Sports Show on the Sports Map Radio Network. From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Alyssa Walker Campbell.
Welcome back, Sports Map Radio Network, the Big E Sports Show. I am your host, Alyssa Walker Campbell. Always love to connect with our audience. You can join us online at Twitter, where we're always live, at eRadio Sports Info, at eRadioSports.com, podcastarena.com. Well, we have already hit on a variety of subjects, but here in hour two, we are looking so forward to our next conversation and visiting with an inspirational speaker who has essentially, I mean, he has done it all. He is a former NFL player. In fact, he played five seasons in the league for the Raiders, the Rams, and the Saints. He is currently an executive with Sports Illustrated. And did you know he was the first NFL player to climb six summits? So we're looking so forward to this conversation. And welcome in the great Mark Pattison. Good morning, Mark.
How you doing?
Hey, it's great to have you on the program. And we're looking forward to reliving so many of your amazing memories. But I just quickly, I want to kind of get the pulse on some of your former teams. I mean, this has certainly been an unique and an unusual season in the NFL during this pandemic. I mean, could you even imagine as a player, you know, muscle through a pandemic and preparing yourself to play each and every week? What do you think it would be like for you?
You know, I don't know, and I feel sorry and bad for a lot of teams, and really more on the college level. I played at the University of Washington. We were very successful way back in the day under Don James, legendary coach. And it just takes so much to do the time on in terms of film study and breaking it down and really understanding your opponent. And every team runs something slightly different and really understanding what that was. A week ago, the University of Washington played the University of Utah, and And that game was not scheduled until Wednesday of that particular week, you know, last week.
Right.
And the reason why that was is because Washington was supposed to play, I don't know, I can't remember who they're supposed to play, Washington State or something, and Utah was supposed to play somebody else, and both those teams had COVID issues, and so they bailed out. And so it literally is like a ragtag thing when you're talking about having to travel. I know Stanford is because they shut down the state of the great state of California, and they're not allowing teams to participate. They literally have flown to the Northwest and are practicing somewhere up in either Oregon or Washington in preparation for those two teams. So just the cost, the disruption, all that kind of stuff is just amazing. And then as you move up to the NFL level, it's just, you know, between the facilities being shut down, just games being moved from Sunday to Tuesday. I mean, it's just everybody's having to go through a serious amount of adjustment.
NFL alum Mark Patterson is with us at Sports Map Radio Network. And I'd rattled off some of the teams that you had played for. I mean, do you keep up with the NFL, or have you totally done a hard crossover and you are all about mountaineering?
Well, no, I mean, I still have my hand involved in a number of different ways. You know, there's been a lot of things that have really evolved since I played, you know, 20 plus years ago. And one of the things is when you stopped playing, you literally went off the cliff. That was it. And the NFL has done such a wonderful job of creating these life after football programs, from help in like people have physical, mental issues to financial help to transitioning into different careers and things like that. What they've also done too is buy a team and really created these alumni networks. They really never used to have this. Having once a year Raider reunions, Saint reunions, where you can come down, you can see your old teammates, and really trying to foster that community that we all had. You know, it was so much about the locker room, and you've heard this many times over, that the thing that so many of the players miss the most is not necessarily getting hit on the field,
right,
but what went on in the locker room with those guys, kind of like the military people that go to war and they're in those combat units and all the things that they have to go through. So I do have my hands in terms of weekly communications from around the league, what's going on, how, you know, NFL players can be helped, so on and so forth. And then my role at Sports Illustrated is such that, you know, I'm constantly involved at running all these different team sites that we have for the Cowboys or the Saints or the Rams, you know, all the different 32 teams that we have. And so, I constantly am at kind of the front of the news of what's happening, breaking news, things like that. And then for my mountaineering, it's been really great. You know, you said it almost correctly at the very beginning. I'm in the process of trying to become the first NFL player to climb all seven summits of climb
okay.
six of the seven. Yep, with Mount Everest next up here in the spring of 2021. And I was set to go over. And so you talked about, you know, having to adjust from NFL and college teams and other sports teams. The world has had to adjust. And I was supposed to go to Nepal this last April to take on that big beast, Mount Everest. And, you know, the whole world shut down with COVID. And so I had to readjust. And so I've been training now going into my second year for this thing, this big ultimate challenge. But the tie-in is that the NFL and other sports, University of Washington, things like that, have been very supportive in what I'm doing in terms of that connection to sport and mountaineering.
Okay, so you grew up in the Northwest, as you were talking about. You played collegiately at the University of Washington. You guys had a lot of success. How did you, I mean, did you always have an affinity and a love for, you know, climbing? I mean, where did this come from?
Well, you know, when I was growing up, my dad took me up in the mountains. And if anybody's that is familiar with the state of Washington, and in particular in Seattle, it's a very mountainous community. And we've got a big mountain up there called Mount Rainier. It's 14,500. And actually, a lot of people come from around the states to take that on. It's really, just with all the elements that they have, it's a mini Mount Everest in terms of being very glacier-aided. And the temperature and the ice and the walls that you have to climb and everything else. And so I started climbing, you know, just small things when I was a kid, and then kind of made my way up. But it was really about 8-9 years ago, I was going through a challenging time. And so I really needed to have a big goal put out there in front of me in order to pull myself out of this place. And you know, it was hard, it was challenging, but it just seemed like once I put that goal out there, I did some research, I found that no NFL player had ever climbed the seven summits, and I said, you know what, I'm going to be that guy. And then rather than focus on my situation, everything was focused towards what was out there, how I was going to go achieve this, the kind of shape I was going to have to get in, the kind of mountains I was going to have to train on.
Sports Illustrated executive, NFL alum. He has just done it all. And so we look forward to our another conversation in the spring. Thank you so much, Mark. We really appreciate you carving out some time.
Thank you.
Continued success. You bet. Much more coming your way. Sports Map Radio Network. We will be right back.
This is the Big East Sports Show on the Sports Map Radio Network. From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Okay, welcome back. Sports Map Radio Network, the Big East Sports Show. I'm your host, Alyssa Walker-Campbell. Always love to connect with our audience on many different platforms and ways. You can join us live on Twitter at eRadioSports. Info at eradiosports.com, podcastarena.com. Right now, it is time to talk some college basketball. And in our next segment, we have selected a very special book review that we're going to shine the spotlight on. I certainly enjoyed following his team throughout the years, the incredible career at Georgetown University. You bet, we are talking about the legendary basketball coach and Hall of Famer, John Thompson. Coach Thompson passed away in the month of August. And joining us this morning to celebrate his extraordinary career is the senior writer from ESPN and co-author, that is Jesse Washington. He has just released John Thompson's new autobiography. It is titled, I Came as a Shadow, and there are so many wonderful lessons that I'm excited to share with all of you this morning. And it's just a remarkable sports memoir. It's the first time on the show. Good morning, Jesse.
Good morning. Thanks so much for having me.
Well, as I mentioned, it is a fascinating read, and it's not just a basketball autobiography. I mean, it really does take a deep dive on Coach Thompson's life on and off the basketball court. And some of my takeaways, I mean, what a powerful testimony about, you know, perseverance, fortitude, overcoming the odds. I'm just curious, as I was going through this, pull back the curtain. I mean, how did you team up with Coach on this project, and how did you earn his trust?
Coach was convinced by his children, Tiffany, Ronnie, and John, to finally write his autobiography. He was a very, very private person, and he had to have that wall up in order to protect himself and his family and his players from everybody who was, quite frankly, out to get them. So it took a while for him to let his guard down. You know, his team found me, and they teamed me up with Coach Thompson. And I think that the way I earned his trust was when he read some of the early stuff and it sounded like him. You know, that was our biggest goal with this book, was to make sure that it captured Coach's distinctive voice, his way of speaking. He was such a great teacher. And so to really capture that and have the book feel like you are actually hearing directly from Coach and not through some sort of filter. So once it sounded like him and we were getting his messages across, then he said, all right, boy, you're doing a good job. I think I'm going to keep you.
So tell me this. I mean, Jesse, did you feel, I mean, you're so talented and gifted as a writer, but I mean, was it a bit overwhelming because he has had such an illustrious and, as I mentioned, an extraordinary career? I mean, it was like, where do you start, right?
Yeah, I think the pressure came at the beginning when you're faced with, you know, the prospect of having to do justice to his life. How do you capture that? How do you explain the full measure of everything that he went through, what he means to not only sports history, but American history? But, you know, once you start talking about it and you get into the details, you know, and he starts to explain who he is and what's important to him, it really came pretty naturally after that.
Did you feel like kind of one of his players when you were working one-on-one with him and he was kind of coaching you as you guys went along?
Oh, man, did I? I mean, you know, I played a little basketball in my day. I was never, ever close, never close to being good enough to play for Georgetown, although we all wanted to growing up in the 80s. But there were times during the book where I really felt like I had Hoyas on my jersey, you know, especially toward the end when, you know, Coach, before he died, and he approved everything that's in there, and he cared deeply about delivering this message to everybody. And when he said that we had done a good job and he was satisfied with the book, I felt like I had just helped him win a game.
The senior writer for ESPN's The Undefeated and co-author of the brand new book. It is titled I Came as a Shadow, talking about John Thompson. And here, Jesse, you worked so intimately with him. And you've said many times, you know, worked very hard to get the message across. What was that message? Because he did not want this book to just be about the game of basketball.
You're right. He told me over and over, this is not a book about basketball, Jesse. And I said, that's great, because I would be unsatisfied doing that as well. So we both cared about that. And he had so many messages in there. But I think if there was one overarching thing that he wanted people to take away, particularly young people, it was this. We can succeed with our minds. Intelligence places you in a better position than athletics and for a longer period of time. And particularly in the black community, oftentimes young people feel that their only way out, their only way to college, their only way to success legally is through sport.
Mm-hmm.
And what Coach Thompson wanted us to know is, hey, man, we can succeed. We can think our way to greatness. We don't have to dunk or run our way to greatness every time. Now, he loved sports and he loved the opportunities that it presented and he cared about that. But what about after you slow down and can't jump as high and can't run as fast? What are you going to do then? You know, that's what he wanted people to think about with this book.
Jesse, tell us about the inspiration of the title of the book, I Came as a Shadow. Where does that come from?
Thank you for asking. When Coach Thompson was growing up in the 40s and 50s in segregated Washington and visiting his parents, his father's people in Jim Crow, Southern Maryland, he did not see any examples of intellectual achievement by black people. As he says in the book, he grew up in the Frederick Douglass housing project, but had no idea who Frederick Douglass was.
Mm-hmm.
All of the people who were held out as successful for young black kids were athletes, like Joe Lewis or Jackie Robinson or things like that. But he had an uncle. His uncle's name was Louis Grandison Alexander, and he was a poet in the Harlem Renaissance. And his uncle was praised by his mom and his aunts. And, oh, Langston Hughes came by the house to see Uncle Louis. And his uncle wrote a poem. And as we were working on the book one day,
uh-huh.
He just mentioned it offhand, and he recited the poem to me. And the poem begins like this. I came as a shadow. I stand now a light. The depth of my darkness transfigures your night. And the poem goes on in that vein, and then all of a sudden the light bulb went off, and I said, oh, Coach, you identify with that shadow, don't you? And he said, you're damn right I do, boy. and so then I figured it out. Now, for those of us who follow Coach Thompson in his career, we would not expect him, based on his public image, which he dispels in the book, based on his public image, we wouldn't expect him to be walking around reciting poetry. But that was an unknown side of him. His daughter, Tiffany, suggested it as the title of the book. And I think it's wonderful.
You also mentioned in the book that basketball became a vehicle for him to challenge injustices. What will our audience, what will our listeners find when they open it up?
Well, they will find things like in 1989, when the NCAA tried to pass a academic rule that would have been disproportionately discriminatory against black athletes, Coach boycotted two games. He refused to coach. I mean, imagine if Mike Krzyzewski or John Calipari said, I'm not coaching to protest this discriminatory rule. You know, that was Coach's stature at that time. It received a tremendous amount of attention, and the NCAA rescinded the rule. So those were the type of injustices that he was challenging. Other things that he challenged through basketball was just speaking up when people were doing things that were wrong. He spoke up against some of the other things that he thought were unfair that the NCAA did. He spoke up strongly in favor of racial equality. But he always knew from the very beginning when he got to Georgetown University in 1972 that he had to win. Because he said, hey, if I didn't win, nobody would listen to me. And I intended to be heard.
The senior writer for ESPN's The Undefeated and co-author of the brand new book, I Came as a Shadow, as we shine the spotlight on John Thompson, our very special guest, is Jesse Washington. And, you know, what's interesting is Coach Thompson, he had always planned to be a teacher and not a basketball coach. So tell us a little bit more about, as far as his background, how he was raised, and who inspired him to be a teacher. Who was the greatest influence in his life? He was a mama's boy. Come on, right?
Absolutely. I mean, he loved his mom, and his mom was the one of the biggest influences in his life. He credits his mother and father more than anyone else with the things he was able to accomplish. And his mother was had a college degree as a teacher, but due to segregation at that time, she could not get work in her chosen profession, and so she cleaned houses for a living. And his father had to leave school in elementary age and go to work in the fields of Southern Maryland, and his father could not read or write. So these are his parents, who he says taught him more than anyone else. He says his father taught him more than someone with a doctorate. Now, there were several other black women who he credits with giving him more of his coaching ability than some of the greatest minds in basketball. The first was Sameta Wallace Jackson, his sixth grade teacher. He had a reading disability, which Mrs. Jackson helped him solve, and she saved his life. She also taught him how to deal with young people, how to protect their feelings, and he translated many of her methods directly into his coaching at Georgetown. The second teacher who really influenced him was Dr. Anita Hughes, who ran his master's degree program at the University of the District of Columbia. And yes, John Thompson had a master's degree in counseling and guidance. And so these are some of the educators who he really came up under. So it's no wonder that when Coach Thompson got to college athletics, he pioneered the aspect of not exploiting these athletes, making sure they get degrees. And 97% of his four-year players graduated from Georgetown.
The long-awaited autobiography from Georgetown's University legendary coach, John Thompson. It is titled, I Came as a Shadow. We're visiting with the co-author. That is Jesse Washington. And I'm a former collegiate basketball player, and someone I've always looked up to was Patrick Ewing. So what did you learn about his relationship with his player, Patrick? I mean, what did you share in the book about that?
Well, you know, when we watched Patrick play, and as great as he was ferocious. He was always played his hardest. You know, he had that expression of intensity and seriousness on his face. When he came down with the ball for a rebound, those elbows would be out.
Yes.
So, you know, that's the Patrick Ewing that we knew in the public.
Oh, yeah.
Coach Thompson said that Patrick Ewing is the nicest superstar that he ever coached. He said he had more leverage over me than any player I ever had and used it the least. If you asked Patrick to show up at 8, he would be there at 7:45. He said, and I quote, it would not be a mistake to call Patrick a sweet person. What? Patrick Ewing? A sweet person? You know, I don't think the Bulls would think that, you know? So these are some of the things we learned about Patrick. But what really comes through is the depth of their relationship and the love that they had for each other. And I witnessed that when we were writing the book. We spent a lot of time at Georgetown University's basketball office, where Patrick is the coach now, and to see them spend time together and just talk about little things, and coach would give him a hug, it was a beautiful thing.
There is nothing quite like a coach-player relationship. Senior writer for ESPN's The Undefeated, go out and get a copy. It is titled, I Came as a Shadow, a must-read. And I have to share, the pictures inside the book are awesome. Give us a sneak peek. Tell some of the listeners what they're going to find.
Oh, wow, man.
They're awesome.
Yeah, I think the ones that really touched me the most, you know, Coach Thompson loved his family so much. And there's a photo of him sitting on the bench with two of his two sons, John and Ronnie. They got to be about, I don't know, 5 years old and 7 years old, something like that. And he has his arm stretched out protectively around them. Mm-hmm. And his arm is long enough to go around both of them at the same time. And they're sitting in their own seat. Coach Thompson is 6'10" and a very large person. So you have that photo in there, which is wonderful. And it was at the warm-ups for a game in the 1970s. Right below that is another picture of him sitting with John and Ronnie as adults in the gym, still enjoying the game of basketball, still father and son, and just the love that you see flowing forth from those two pictures, the lineage, the fact that his son coached it at Georgetown for 12 years after him, the fact that until last year when Virginia won the national championship, Coach John Thompson, senior and junior, were the only father and son to ever both coach their way to the Final Four. So it was very meaningful to me, those two pictures.
An iconic, a legendary career. When we talk about John Thompson, what a very special guest helping us break it all down, and that is Jesse Washington. He's the senior writer for ESPN's The Undefeated and co-author of this long-awaited autobiography. So happy holidays, and Jesse, thank you so much. Congratulations. We look forward to having another conversation in 2021. All the best.
This is the Big East Sports Show on the Sports Map Radio Network. From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Alyssa Walker Campbell.
Okay, welcome back. Hour 2, Sports Map Radio Network, sportsmapradio.com, the Big East Sports Show. I am your host, Alyssa Walker Campbell. Always love to hear from our audience and connect. You can join us live on Twitter at eRadioSportsInfo, at eRadioSports.com, podcastarena.com. We love our listeners and we love our sponsors. And when your battery goes dead, everything can come to a stop. Don't let that happen. Don't take a risk on a dead battery. O'Reilly Auto Parts provides free battery testing. And if your battery does need to be replaced, the professional parts people can find the exact battery that fits your car or truck with free installation. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better prices every day. Well, can you believe it? I mean, we are less than 1 week away from Christmas, and we're going to get you ready here at Sports Map Radio Network. We're going to reflect on the 2020 U.S. Women's Open. So many highlights. It was here in Houston. It was incredible, but it was very, very cold. The women, they had to muscle through all of that. We're going to hit on that, and we are so delighted to welcome in the one and only former PGA Tour player, that is the great Larry Miller. Good morning, Larry.
Good morning, everybody. Gee, I don't know what it's like there, but in New Orleans, it's one of the rare days when it's too cold to play, really. It's kind of miserable outside, but anyway, warmer weather is coming.
Well, I hope you're sitting by the fireplace. We're looking forward to a wonderful conversation, and we want to get your general takeaways from the Open. I mean, there were so many great stories and compelling contenders, but what did you think of the 2020 U.S. Women's Open that was rescheduled 6 months later here in December?
Well, I thought the course played very tough. Of course, the conditions had a lot to do with that, but having played there before several times myself, even with good weather, it's a pretty tough track. Tough golf course, and then when you add in the weather and the elements and the pressure of an Open championship, you know, then you see the scores go up, where we talked about this many times, where a regular tour event, men or women, you know, you get 18, 20, 22 under par, and all of a sudden a U.S. Open or a women's U.S. Open comes around, and even par is a great score. And we saw it again. But I think this time, I think the conditions had a lot to do with it. And interestingly, you know, I was looking at and counting the names, and it's pretty interesting. You know, the top 20 players, finishers in the Open, you know how many Americans were in the top 20? One. And it just shows you how women's golf internationally has grown, and how dedicated they are to excellence over there. And I've talked to some of the coaches, and even some of the caddies over there in South Korea. And these people, they take golf. I mean, it's like going to military school. I mean, that's all they do from a young age all day long is practice and practice putting. And they're dedicated to it. And so it's no wonder that we're seeing this. We need to get more, you know, more U.S. girls out there playing and working hard like that. But anyway, it's another topic. But no, I thought the conditions made it very difficult. And Amy Olsen, it was, you know, when she made that hole in one,
right?
It just seemed to light a fire under her. And after she did that, I saw the way she played the next few holes. She birdied two of the next three after the hole in one. And I started picking her to win the golf tournament because she was so in the zone. And she almost did. She almost pulled it off.
Well, that was one of the biggest storylines as far as Amy Olsen, who played the final round with a very heavy heart. Of course, her father-in-law had died unexpectedly on Saturday night, and she had to compete in some very difficult circumstances, and she finished second. So you just have to wonder, you know, going forward, what is the future for Amy Olsen? And I have to wonder, too, you know, she has such a solid game. Why hasn't she won before? I mean, she's really good.
Yeah, well, I think this is going to push her to another level, this finish. You know, when you finish that high in a major tournament or win one, it makes you realize that you can do it. And it takes a lot of stress it takes a lot of the wondering if you can do it out of the equation once you do it. And so then you're free, you know, to go ahead and perform the way that you did in that one tournament. You see it all the time. You see a player, you know, all of a sudden break through and win one or finish very high, And the next thing you know, they're up there quite a bit. And I think this is going to propel her, yes, I think, to greater levels in her career. I think she's got a great golf swing.
Oh, yes.
Just, you know, and I think she handles herself very well emotionally. And, yeah, she was under that terrible emotional strain. But you know, it's funny in golf sometimes. Golf's a sport where they always say beware of the hurt player. You know, person's not feeling well or got a cold or something, and they play great. And I think one of the reasons is that golf is sort of it's a game where it's good to be in a bubble. And whether it's a physical thing that's bothering you that kind of quiets you down, or whether it's an emotional thing like grief, like she was dealing with, I think it sort of isolates you. You isolate yourself within yourself, and that's what golf requires. That's what it wants. It doesn't want a busy mind, and it doesn't want you all over the place. It wants you quiet and isolated. So ironically, you know, it, sometimes something like that can end up, you know, being a part of a great performance.
We are providing a full recap as we are inside the ropes with former PGA Tour player Larry Miller of the U.S. Women's Open. We were just highlighting Amy Olsen's inspiring performance. She showed incredible resilience and tied for second. You know, it's interesting. I mean, and she's from South Dakota, right? So she played well in some very extreme circumstances. It was super cold. What is your mindset when you prepare to play winter golf? I mean, you know the scores are going to be a little bit higher, but obviously she thrived in these circumstances.
Yeah, and there are three main things that you have to keep in mind when you're playing in cold winter weather. Number one, you've got to stay warm, but at the same time, you have to be able to swing freely without being constricted or bound up. So it's very important to get a great, you know, if you want to call it a rain suit or a winter, you know, winter rain suit or warm, you know, winter, just something that's very light, but yet, blocks the wind, blocks the cold, but still allows you to make a free swing without being bound up. That's really important. The hands, you got to keep your hands warm. They have these, they call them cart mitts, cart gloves. You know, it looks like big boxing gloves.
Oh, yeah.
They're fuzzy and warm inside.
And
yeah, Ping makes some great ones. Titleist makes some great ones. And they really come in handy because you can put them on until you're ready to hit your shot. And that way your hands stay warm right up until the time you swing. And that is so important. So those two things. The other thing is you have to realize that the ball is not going to go as far in cold weather. It's at least a club, maybe a little bit more than a club difference in the distance a ball will travel in that kind of weather. So you have to factor that in when you're calculating your distances. So number one, you want your body to stay warm, but yet free to swing. You want your hands to stay warm until you hit the shot, and then you have to factor in the fact that the ball's not going to go as far. But if you do those things, you can still play well in cold weather. I found that out myself, and it's a great thing to know when you're playing, especially if you're in a tournament. If you're in a tournament in the winter, you have to do those things to be able to compete.
Okay, so we talk about Amy Olsen. We have got to highlight Caitlin Papp and her future. She's a senior at the University of Texas, and she was able to secure the low amateur honors for the event. She finished, what, inside the top 10. And there were a lot of younger players that made a run. They went deep in this tournament. So we're seeing some of these young players here in the United States. I mean, they're taking their game to the next level.
Yeah, that's right. And there's so many of them. And, you know, you almost don't want to use the word amateur anymore, you know, because they play so many tournaments in college and as juniors, and they're so seasoned. You know, we've talked about this a lot that they're amateurs because they haven't turned pro and they don't get the money, but they're so seasoned, competitive wise that they're ready to win. You know, it's just like on the men's tour. I mean, you see these young players almost every week, somebody comes up and wins it. And it's because they're ready. They're competitively, they're ready to win when they step out there. And that it has not been that way. I mean, that's just a recent development. It used to be where you had to work your way up from one level to another and get used to the pressure and get used to all the things that go along with being a traveling touring professional. But now, they're just about ready and seasoned already and ready to go. So, it doesn't surprise me at all, but we need to get more women playing golf. You know, one thing about television and women's golf tournaments, you know, one of the reasons that it's not the ratings are so much lower than it is for the men's tour. The last time I checked with the National Golf Foundation, that's the statistical body of golf, and about 20% of all golfers are women. So, you know, it's a matter of numbers. And also, in my long years of experience of playing and teaching, I have seen where, now I'm not talking about junior players who are aspiring, and I'm not talking about college players, but I'm talking about just women golfers at country clubs or golf courses around the country and the world.
Right.
They like to play golf. You know, for every man that for every woman that I see on the practice tee hitting balls, I'll see 50 men, because women just they want to get out and play. They don't really like to beat balls and they don't want to practice as much, and they don't really care much about watching it. They want to play. They want to get out and play. It's about 80% social for them, and the rest is playing golf and scoring. But and I'm talking about the general population, not the collegiate players and not the juniors.
Okay.
So that's why it's not watched as much as the men's tour, because it's simply a matter of numbers.
And that certainly was a big discussion point as far as with the coverage of the U.S. Women's Open is, you know, why the women's game doesn't have higher ratings in television. But I will say one thing that is a positive is when we talk about the growth of the LPGA and the women's game is this is the first time I've ever seen a woman win $1 million in an event. I mean, A-Lim Kim, I mean, that's some cool cash, right?
Yeah, and that's good, because that will really motivate
a lot of
young players to work hard, knowing that they can, you know, in past years, the women really couldn't make a living out there except for the top 5 or 10. But now, if they can get the money going up like that, then sure, it's going to motivate a lot of young players to want to get serious about the game and work at it. So that's a good thing, and I hope that continues if they can get the sponsors. Because I love watching women's golf, because they're so accurate. Their swings are so good. It's a great thing to watch. It's good for your game to watch their tempo and their rhythm and how accurate they are with their ball striking.
It was tough, though, seeing them having to deal with those mud balls. That wasn't easy, though.
No, mud balls are a terror. There's nothing I hate worse than a mud ball in the tournament, because you don't know where it's going. I mean, it can go anywhere. And typically, if the mud is on the left side of the ball's going to squirt to the right. You know, and vice versa, if the mud's on the right side of the ball, it's going to squirt to the left. But sometimes it doesn't happen that way for unknown reasons. But it will. It will about 80-90% of the time. It'll hold true to that. But it's that doubt that you don't know where it's going that makes you sort of make a tentative swing and makes it even worse. But no, that's a terrible thing, is mud on the ball. And you know, I know the men players, if they're getting mud on the golf ball, they're going to lift clean and place it. They just don't tolerate it. And you know, it really is unfair. I don't like lift clean and place, but I do like lift clean and drop. I don't think you should get to place it up on a tuft of grass like it's teed up, but I do think you should be able to clean the mud off and then drop it.
Were you surprised they did not allow the women to do that in this U.S. Women's Open? Because I don't think they've ever done that before in a major, correct?
Well, in a major, they're a lot more reluctant to do that because,
right,
you know, it's so much more, carries so much more weight, and they want more pure golf, you know, traditional pure golf in majors. You know, unless it's really ridiculous, I don't know how many times it's happened. I'd have to research it, but I don't know if it ever has, if they ever played lift clean in place in a major.
Our PGA News and Notes continues with Larry Miller after this quick break.
This is the Big E Sports Show on the SportsMap Radio Network. From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Hey, welcome back. Hour 2, SportsMap Radio Network, the Big E Sports Show. Right now, let's go back inside the ropes with Larry Miller. We are inside the ropes with former PGA Tour player. It is our final show of 2020. We're going to take the next 2 weeks off with our very special guest. That is Larry Miller. Glad you're with us at SportsMap Radio Network. And we are getting ready to wrap up this kind of crazy year. And it's been so unusual, but golf has led the way. It's been a big year for golf. So what do you think in your mind, Larry, has been the most compelling story?
Yeah, it has been. it has been a savior. Golf has been a savior for a
Amen.
Lot of people during this time, especially during the shutdowns. But I think, I think one of the major stories is what I'm going to call the decline of Tiger Woods. I think finally, and he's been written off several times and he's proved people wrong. But I think this time is it. I don't think you're going to see him, do what he did last year and win the Masters and all that and come back. I think his body is just preventing him from doing it. So I think that's the major story, is that the greatest player that's ever played this game, arguably Tiger Woods, is probably about done. And, the new guard is moving in, all the young players.
Absolutely. And we're talking about his son, Charlie Woods. So I think for the first time, Larry, there's more focus on Tiger Woods' playing partner this weekend than Tiger Woods himself. And his son's only 11 years old. So it makes for some fascinating television. Enjoy it.
Yep. No, Father Time is undefeated, as far as I know.
Absolutely. Yep. Well, listen, we look forward to another conversation in 2021. Merry Christmas, happy holidays, and a very happy new year to you and Connie. We appreciate and love you, Larry. Thank you.
Yep, I want to wish everyone, all the golfers out there and listeners, a Merry Christmas, a happy new year, and look forward to a great 2021.
That, of course, was Larry Miller, who joins us each and every week at Sports Map Radio Network. We'll see you for the biggest, the best in sports, the Big E Sports Show. So long, everybody. Don't drink and drive.